Welcome to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I'm Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, where we specialise in succession law, civil disputes and litigation in Queensland. If you want to safeguard your assets, navigate estate planning with confidence, or resolve legal conflicts effectively, you're in the right place. Join me each week as we break down complex legal issues into clear, practical insights, helping you protect your legacy and find solutions with certainty. Let's dive in. Hello and welcome back to the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I am your host, Lydia Vicar, Director of Vicar Law, and we are continuing our April theme this week, talking about the basics of an enduring power of attorney. So that's when you're alive, but you're incapacitated and someone is making decisions on your behalf. First week, I went through the structure. Last week, we talked all about attorneys. And this week, we're getting into arguably the most controversial aspect of enduring powers of attorney. And that is, when should they start? Okay. Now, hello to all the estate planning practitioners listening to this one very closely. So I'll tell you a story. Okay. Firstly, before my story, I'll explain this kind of when should it start. So there are two types of decisions under the enduring power of attorney where your attorney makes decisions for you. So the first one is health. Now, there's no kind of in the enduring power of attorney, there's no indication of when that is meant to start. And basically what we say, it's based on the medical staff to determine what you can and cannot consent to in terms of your health. So the easiest example is you might be able to consent to getting an IV in your arm. You may not be able to consent to a complex surgery because you may not have the capacity to understand the risks. And that's when an enduring power of attorney will kick in. Nursing homes, for example, want enduring powers of attorney so they have someone to revert to in those situations, you know, whether this person should go to hospital and the like, because quite often that older person just doesn't have the capacity to understand the consequences of going to hospital, not going to a hospital, consenting to a procedure or not consenting. So that is kind of health, and that's really for the medical people to determine. For financial, you can put in your enduring power of attorney when that is meant to start. And the two options that really people like talk about is immediately. So you can have it starting immediately. As soon as the attorney accepts, that's when the power starts. Or you can have it starting when at a trigger point of something else. And in my wills, I have it when you are deemed incapacitated by a medical practitioner. So a medical practitioner has written a letter to say that you do not have capacity to make financial or complex financial or legal decisions for yourself. So with the immediate start, I think automatically that is probably the number one thing that I see in practice in terms of people coming to me with enduring powers of attorney. I would say 95% of the time people don't realize that they've ticked that immediate start. And there are a lot of qualifications to that. So you can say immediately you can sign. A person needs to have the enduring power of attorney, you know, original or certified copy, to use it. Okay, so arguably if it's held with a solicitor, then they can't use it, right? That's the qualification. Attorneys only accept their appointment when they sign. So if you don't get the attorneys to sign, there's no acceptance of that immediate appointment. So there's a few ways that you can kind of safeguard its usage. And that's one school of thought. The other school of thought, and this is what I do as a matter of practice in my enduring powers of attorney, is it kicking in when deemed incapacitated by a medical practitioner. Now, I'll come to my story. So I'm part of a large estate planning group called the TT Precedence Club. Shout out to Tara Lukey, who is the queen of, well, she's the owner of the club, but she's also the queen of testamentary trusts and a really great, I guess she's a mentor of mine. She's fantastic. Love Tara. Anyway, that's a side note for Tara. So I was in a call where we talk about it. Every week we have a hot seat. We go through different scenarios or different areas of laws and talk it through together. And we spoke about this point in terms of when an enduring power of attorney should kick in. On that call, I was the only practitioner that does it on incapacity. And my view of that is that and I guess I'm a civil libertarian in this regard, you should have the power to make decisions for yourself until there's a point in time when you can no longer make those decisions. Okay. Now, other people have said, well, what about the circumstance where you might have someone making poor financial decisions, but they're not necessarily incapacitated? For example, donating large funds to charities or sending money overseas, that kind of thing, but they're not in that point where they are deemed to be incapacitated. Okay. My view in that situation is still that is that person's money. Like, who are you to say that they shouldn't be sending this money to charity? Who are you to say that they shouldn't be sending money overseas? I mean, there are competent people that have capacity that are scammed all the time, sending, you know, money to their love prince over in Nigeria. I mean, really, like, my view is, what is the difference? And in practice, I think a lot of these people will say that they've seen it go wrong where they can't get a letter of capacity, but all these situations are happening. On the flip side, the feedback that I've received from attorneys for ones that I've done is that that qualification gives them authority within the family. So, for example, I had a client who appointed his son as attorney and not his daughter. And the daughter was making a lot of accusations about the son and taking over the father's finances. There were a lot of accusations going back and forth. And what the son said to me was that he was so happy that there was that qualification in there, because it allowed him to say, listen, I have not made any decisions. Like, here's the piece of paper saying that dad doesn't have capacity. That's when I started. That's when I kicked in. And just giving that, just allowing a little bit less conflict in having a really finite point in time where authority was given, as opposed to being accused of just taking over whenever it suited him. So in practice, I'm finding that that is better for people. I know when people sign my enduring powers of attorney, that's what they want. They don't want an immediate start. They want it to be when they are incapacitated. Even in situations that I've had where an attorney has come to me and they've struggled a little bit to get that letter, it's usually something quite major has happened, which has then culminated in a letter being given. But I also think this really goes to the point of, you have to have attorneys that you trust in that position that are going to do the right thing by you. I also, just like with an immediate enduring power of attorney, I have that qualification where I keep all the originals and I keep copies. So if an attorney does come to me, I will say, oh, what's happened to so-and-so? Have they seen a doctor? Have they had a medical? Like, what has happened? So I can kind of figure out what is going on. And that actually happened to me recently. I had a child that was seeking a copy of the enduring power of attorney because they were trying to get their incapacitated parent, a new enduring power of attorney, appointing them. So I was able to kind of prevent that from happening, notify the attorney that that was going on. And it really did, in that circumstance, save that principal, because that principal, that the child that was trying to do that, the principal was very clear in their instructions when they had capacity that they did not want that child anywhere near their finances. So that is my view. It's a very controversial view. I accept that. But at the moment, it is what my clients want. It seems to be working for my clients that are in that position where they are starting to become incapacitated. I will say, I always leave the option open. If you are terminally ill, if you are elderly, if you feel like this might be the last time that you can make that decision, I always speak about the option for those people. 100%. We always talk about that option. But majority of the time, people are happy to stick with incapacitated. And at the end of the day, it's your choice. And if I explain it to you and you make a decision when I feel like you have capacity, that's what it should be. So that's what I say to the naysayers. But, you know, I'd be happy to like talk about this further with people. I'd love to have a debate on it, but that's just the debating captain coming through. So we'll just not worry about that. I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast is like, Lydia, it's fine. But for me, I'm like, I want to prove my point because I'm a lawyer, obviously. And that's something wrong with me. So I'm going to stop now and end this podcast. So if you want to learn more about this, you can hop on my website, www.vicarlaw.com.au, book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. If you want further information about this topic, lots on my website, because it's something that I'm quite passionate about. I've said it before, like, I'm obsessed with capacity and what it means and learning about it and learning about it in practice. So something close to my heart. So thank you so much for listening. Next week, we are going to wrap up the month talking about attorneys behaving badly, which is always a fun topic. And then I'm going to have a special bonus episode for you this month as well. So thank you so much for listening, and I will speak to you next week. Bye. That's a wrap for this episode of the Vicar Law Podcast, Protecting Legacies, Resolving Conflicts. I hope you found today's insights helpful in navigating your legal journey. If you're ready to take the next step in securing your legacy or finally dealing with your dispute, you can pop on my website, www.vicarlaw.com.au, to book a free consultation with me, Lydia Vicar. You can also subscribe to our newsletter or find out more about today's topic. Your future begins now, and we're here to guide you every step of the way. Until next time, I'm Lydia Vicar, signing off. The Vicar Podcast comprises general information and does not serve as a substitute for professional advice. Prior to making any legal decisions, individuals are advised to seek independent professional guidance and assess the suitability of this information for their own individual goals and objectives.